Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I might have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So today's show is all about Loughmore Castellani, lads, for obvious reasons. They won the double in Tipperary. Tears of sadness and despair this time last year, Niall, were replaced by more tears of joy and complete elation. Noel McGrath, I'm thinking of, it was that kind of picture that did the rounds after last year's final. Your heart would go out to them. Like, I mean, the last minute goal after them going a point up, just heartbreak and stuff. To come back and win both, in the circumstances that they won, the two of them as well, Niall, like, I mean, it's hard to believe what they've achieved here.
It is. It's just, it's an unbelievable achievement, really. And thinking back on last year's final, like, I'll never forget, the hurling final especially, like, that was the first one they lost. And I'll never forget Noel McGrath after that game. He kind of just took his helmet off and thrown the hurl at the ground, and he couldn't believe what was after happening. And then they lost by a point the next week in the football. And, like, it was just, It was a horrible way for it to end for them, like, and to get back the way they have done this year. Like, it's just been like the run they've been on, 17 weeks in a row, and as we've been saying all along, it's been the same sort of way they've been winning these games. Like, and it was the same again yesterday. They kind of started slow, like missing chances that you'd expect them to get. But it seems with Loughmore, like, the game doesn't start until there's about 20 minutes to go, and the stakes are really high. And every ball has to be won. And that's when these lads come into their own. And it was the likes of John Maher yesterday. He was winning balls. Like, and that's why he was man of the match. He was winning these balls that just he had to win. And balls that were so hard to win. And, like, it was, that was, that's what they do. Like, and when the pressure's at their highest, they kind of come into their own.
Yeah, exactly. And talk about, like, John McGrath again, standing up when it's counted, Leela. So he got the goal to win the football last week. This week he wins the free. He scores the free. Not only is he happy enough with that, there's a big ruck up the other end of the field, about 30 players in it. Who's going to come out with it? The referee let's see how this will develop. It didn't develop for what seemed like an eternity when the game is in the melting pot. And then the referee throws the ball in. It looks like it hits off one of the player's feet, pops up into John McGrath's hand, bang down the field, final whistle blown. Like, I mean, Roy of the Rover stuff.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, I'd written an article last week about him, and I think I said that It's his world and we're all just living in it, you know. It sort of reminds me of, like, do you remember if you were doing, like, creative writing in school, like in English, and you had to write, like, a dream or something, or some fantasy, you know, just where you achieve your ultimate goal or something. And, like, you and all your friends all had the same brilliant idea where you're, like, it's all Ireland final day and it's the dying seconds, or you're playing for Liverpool in the Champions League and you're the one that gets the goal or the winning score. Like, John McGrath is, like, he's, he's fulfilling the prophecies of all of them stories. You know, it's what everyone dreams of, and for him to do it one week after the other, it's like people didn't even have the imagination to dream that up, you know, but he's gone out and done it. Like, it's absolutely extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, especially after coming off not a great year with Tipperary, you know, like, for him to be, like you said, he was a man of the match in this final, but he's been nearly a man of the match in every game he's been playing in football and in hurling. And then, you know, to just, whatever way that ball just popped, like, sometimes maybe, I don't know, it's written in the stars, like, it popped up into his hand above anyone else. You know, when he was back there, I've never seen a throw-in just pop up off someone's foot, Niall. And then he cleared it down. And I would say, no disrespect to Thurles Sarsfields, who are very good as well. Like, I mean, every neutral in the country probably jumped up off the couch when that final whistle blew.
Oh, definitely. Like, we were in the house there watching it, and like, you were just delighted when the ball, like, it popped up to John McGrath, and it was such a present. Like, I'd say he's never won an easier ball in his life. Like, he even had time to sort of just set himself and go then again. And when he had the ball running out, like, it was just everyone in Lochmore knew that was it then. Like, and but the same thing happened a minute earlier when he won the free. He was running down along the corner with Paddy Maher, and he went to rise the first time and missed it. Yeah. Like, and the ball hopped out of his hand, and you're thinking, geez, he's in bother here. He's down at the corner flag. But whatever way he does it, he just buys space for himself. And as strong as Paddy Maher is, John McGrath kind of just manoeuvred him to the wrong side and just held him off without even moving. Like, and he has that knack of just getting to where the space is, and he's never blocked down or anything like that. And I was listening to it on TG Cahir, and the commentary was in Irish, and Donal O'Grady says, the co-commentator, he was like, this is a tough free now, it's out at an angle, he's missed one or two earlier, and Donal O'Grady just said, it's coma, yoi she, which is, it doesn't matter, he's going to score.
Right.
And like, I think everyone knew, like, John McGrath, he's so calm, like, and he walked up to the ball, you knew he was going to score.
Yeah, I knew he was going to score too.
He wasn't going to miss, like, and just the whole, like, that was just Lochmore. We were talking about it earlier, like, the whole way through the game, Noel McGrath so clever, Lee McGrath so clever, but, like, as well as that, there was the fight of lads, like, John Maher kept going the whole way through, Kieran Connolly in midfield, like, he just never stops running, and the last 10 minutes, it was just war. Like, it was ball going from one end of the field, and it was no real short passing. Like, it was just, we'll lump it down.
Traditional
here.
Stuff. And the referee letting everything go too. Like, I mean, which added to, again, like, it was like a Kilkenny final, wasn't it?
It was very similar to that Kilkenny final. Like, for the last 5 minutes, you're thinking, there's definitely going to be a free here. Like, I just haven't heard the whistle. But it just, the play kept going, and the referee, Kieran McCormick is his name, he just let them at it. And it really added to the spectacle, because the last 5 minutes of that game, it was just like, if you win a ball here, you know you're going to get absolutely flaked. Like, and that's the way it was. And I think that kind of a game suited Lochmore and brought the best out of him.
It did. Like, I mean, I finally realised what hurling people say, let it flow. It's so obvious. Let the bloody game flow. I'm going to start saying it now myself. I'm totally on that side. Right, enough of us lads, because I spoke with the captain, Lochmore Castellani captain, Noel McGrath, earlier, and I started off by asking him how the head was today.
All good now, Colin, all good. Good old night, so we're all fresh and happy this morning.
You're definitely happy, whether you're fresh or not. That's up for debate or not. Come here, I saw you said yesterday it was your proudest moment in your career, captaining the team yesterday.
Yeah, look, I suppose they're special days. Like, and it's 8 years since we won a county final. Like, and to get the honour to go up and do it is unbelievable. Like, so, like, you soldier so long with lads to do something like that and to eventually achieve it then and be the one to go up and accept the cup on behalf of the boys is unreal. So it was a massive day for us all and one that, for me personally, I'll remember for the rest of my life.
The last year's finals, the two of them, absolute heartbreak. I think the whole country was feeling for you after that last minute goal, after you going the pint up with the 65. Do it, like, I mean, there was a picture of you doing the rounds, you know, you were crying on the field, and you know, you fast forward a year and you're still crying on the field, but it's it's for a completely different reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was two totally different games and two totally different outcomes, but thankfully, we were on the right side of it this year, because last year was heartbreaking. And like, you think when that happens that you might never get back there when you're so close. Like, so for it to happen the way it did over the last 2 weekends was unreal. And we'll definitely remember that for a while anyway, because we all remember the heartbreak we had last year as well. So To have the off the field this year is unreal.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Did you fancy John to get that free at the end?
To be honest, I remember it all right, but I didn't realise how late it was in the game. I thought there might have been another maybe 3 or 4 or 5 minutes left. So he had been hitting him well all day. I think he missed one or two in the first half, but he's been hitting him well for the last few weeks. So we'd be confident enough in him. He's been hitting the frees for all year there and been fairly successful with him. So, but on the pitch, I didn't really realise how long was left. So. I didn't feel as nervous maybe as people sitting in the stand or watching on telly.
Right, okay. Like, I mean, for John it was a fairy tale ending because he won that free, then he scored it, and then I don't know how the hell, I think the referee went to throw the ball in after it was a scrum for about 30 seconds and then he threw the ball in. It must have hit someone's boot and popped up into his hand.
Yeah, the boy said that it just hit off someone's knee or early and just flew straight into his hand and he cleared it away, but how easy that could have went the other way and flew into his arse that hand. So it's just a small margin, but we were delighted to see someone coming out with it, the red and green anyway, and clearing it out.
Well, what are you thinking in those moments at the end, especially after what happened last year? Like, I mean, is that going through your mind or is it like, Jesus, we could get caught here? Or are you trying to stay positive and confident that you close it out?
I don't think you have time to think about that. It's just so much going on in that period of time. Like when we were 4 or 5 up and then we conceded a goal and got them back into it and next minute they're level. So you don't really have time to think what's going on and you don't realise what's left time-wise or anything like that. So I don't know what's going through our heads, but that's it's just hoping the ref will blow the whistle and it'll be all over.
How are you always in these games that go down to the wire, whether it's football or hurling? Number one, you have a slow start. Number two, you make a big comeback. And number three, it's going to be a completely nerve-wracking finish.
Yeah, I think some of our supporters will be giving out to us that we're going to give some of them a heart attack one of these days, the way it's going. But I don't know at this stage of the championship, every team you play is going to be fairly good, and you're not going to win any matches by too much. So thankfully we've come to the right side, and as you said, last year we were on the other side of, but we're up against two serious teams as well. All the games, and if you look around the county country and any county finals and that, the results at this end of the year are very tight. I'm sure there's plenty of games that went to extra time and replays as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. Have you talked about your slow starts to games? Is that because you're on the road every weekend and you might have to shake kind of rustiness out of the legs?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I suppose the last few weeks we have had a slow start in both the hurling and the football, but I don't really know if you can put it down to anything really. I suppose once we're able to stick in the game, and I think in the drawn game especially, we just held ourselves in there in that last 10 minutes of the first half and gave ourselves a chance, because that was a stage where the game could have got away from us. So we just have that in us, I suppose. We're an experienced team, whereas 7, 8, 9 years ago, things like that games might have got away from us, and teams might have went from 6 or 7 up to maybe 10 or 11 up, and the game is over then. So I think we've just learned, and lads have the experience of playing and know that we have it in the bodies to keep going for the 60 minutes.
Yeah. How are you managing the 18, is it 18 you're at now, weekends in a row of championship? How are you managing it? How do you plan the week?
I suppose we've trained for whatever code we're playing at the weekend. We train most Tuesdays or Wednesday nights, whichever. If the match is on a Sunday, we train Wednesday. If it's on a Saturday, we train the Tuesday. And then depending what day it's on the following weekend, we mightn't train at all, or we might train on the Friday night. So it's managed well, in fairness, by the management, and that. And they know how much to do on any given night, and that keeps us fresh. And when you're changing from hurling to the football, people think of it as a negative at times, but it keeps us fresh for both codes. We go back to playing hurling after a football week, we haven't played hurling for 8 or 9 days, and lads are just mad for hurling then. And same when it comes to the football, you'll be looking forward to it because you haven't played it in over a week. So it keeps things fresh. And then there's a swap over of players as well, and lads that maybe haven't played in the football are going to play in the hurling, and haven't played in the hurling are going to play in the football, and that keeps them fresh as well. And everybody drives it on, and that gives everyone energy then as well when there's lads coming in looking mad to play, like, and just wanting to get on the pitch.
Yeah. So what did the lads? What did the lads do? Most of you played the duel, though, don't you? Like, I mean, there's only like one or two that might come in fresh to freshen it up.
Yeah, like everybody trains for both. Like, nobody doesn't do one or the other. Like, everybody's there every night of the week training. Like, but like it's just, I suppose everyone wants to play the part whatever way they can, and everybody is doing that. And like, whatever you're asked to do, you'll go do it. So there's, as I said, like, from since we were 8 or 9, like, that's the way our club works. Even if you see it now at the moment, like, the juveniles train for hurling and football, sometimes even on the same day, like, so we've been just used to it. And I think people probably make a bigger deal of it outside of our club as probably we do, because it's just the way it is. Like, you look at the history of our club, like, in the 50s and 60s, I don't know if there was any hurling being played in the club. Like, it was all football. So that's where we've come from, the club, like, as a football club back in the 50s, 60s, and hurling kind of got going then in the late 70s and early 80s. So it's that's what our club was built on, I suppose, and we're just delighted to be able to keep that tradition going.
Yeah, well, you definitely are. Like, I mean, there's people send me messages, and you hear different stories, like club managers discouraging players from playing both, and even some clubs have a policy of discouraging, you know, football over hurling or hurling over football. Like, you're very clear evidence. Slocknail too, Cratlow have done it, that it is possible. Like, I mean, you know, like, this probably sounds very strange to you coming from the club that you're from, that any club or any manager would discourage it.
Yeah, like, look, we obviously have heard them stories, like, from different clubs in different places, like, and but I suppose for us ourselves, over the last 10 or 12 years, we have the same manager for both hurling and football, which I think is the biggest thing that you need to do, because that means then that there's no conflict of interest, that manager wants both teams to do well, like, and they have to manage the players, they have to manage the training, and there's no arguing between one manager and another then as to who trained this night or who plays this night or whatever. Like, and I think that's massive for us, like, is that everybody that's involved is interested in both teams and wants the two teams to do well. Like, whereas if you have two separate managers, obviously they're going to want their players on any given night, like, and that's natural as well. Like, but I think that just works for us in Loughmore Castellina anyway, and thankfully it seems to be working all right at the moment anyway.
Jeez, it is. It definitely is working. Come here. We were talking on the show last week about how you're going to manage the week between the football and the hurling. And we were saying, would they even go for a pint? And I was saying, it's probably the only time I'd ever maybe understand them not being allowed to have a pint after a county final, considering how long you're on the go and the hurling. How did you celebrate the football?
Well, to be honest, Colin, like, the reason we do it is to enjoy it. Like, so after the football, we had a few pints, like, out and back out and knock more, like, because if like, I seen your clip all right on Twitter, and kind of a few lads were kind of laughing at it and saying, God, if they only knew, like, but we definitely went for a few pints, like, because that's why you do it, like, and to enjoy it. And I think if you went home after a match like that, you probably wouldn't sleep anyway. So I don't think a couple of pints and a bit of crack was going to do much harm at that stage. And I suppose if we got bit yesterday, there'd be people saying, what were we doing? But when we didn't, it worked. And I think there are small things that people make a big deal of at times. I think, like, if you win a county final at any level, it's well earned. So you need to celebrate it and enjoy it. And we did, and we'll celebrate and enjoy this one now as well.
You must have an unbelievable team spirit in that you're all on the go non-stop, and you're winning together as well.
Yeah, look, I suppose you're spending so much time with lads. Like, it creates a great bond and a great energy with everyone. And, like, we're all kind of come up along growing up together. There's different groups that would have played together from under 12 up along to senior. Like, and we've all blended in together, like, over the last number of years. I suppose it's not just this year, but over the last 5, 6, 7 years, even when we weren't winning. Like, but we're like, it's a small enough place. Like, everybody knows everybody. And, like, we all enjoy each other's company. We've plenty of rows and arguments at times too, and that's all part of it. But at the end of the day, like, we're all friends and we all get on with it. And when we win, we enjoy it. And when we don't, we still get on with it, and we back each other, and we enjoy each other's company, whether that's on or off the field.
I see you needed a leash man to get you over the line as well. I saw Mick Dempsey out in the field there.
Yeah, he's been helping us out already. I think your number wasn't ringing tonight. They were ringing. They wanted someone from the leash to come down and give us a hand. So. But yeah, no, Mick has been very good with us there in the last while. It's a great experience, like from his time with Kilkenny and in Carlo IT and many different teams. Like, so look, every little helps, like, and he has been a good help, and it has blended in with the management very well. And I suppose the plus with Mick coming as well was that while Mick's name was probably made with the Kilkenny hurling team, I think Mick's background is in football with his club in Leash. So
yeah,
I suppose whether he understood what he was getting himself into with the two codes going hand in hand, I think now he's seen that it has worked for us anyway, and he's played a part in that as well, and hopefully over the next few weeks he'll play another part in it.
Yeah, Mick Dempsey gave me my debut senior football in 1998, so he did. So I always have good memories of Mick. He obviously played
I'll ask him during the week what you were like.
I had a brilliant debut, actually. Yeah, the next game not so good, but the debut went well.
That's the way it works. Swings and roundabouts.
Exactly. Come here, Luke. You were on the goal since 2007 with Loughmore Castellini. Like, I mean, it's hard to believe you were 16 years old when you won the county final and you won the Munster that year. Like, I mean, are you the only one finished or still going from then? Like, this is just a completely new team.
No, there's three lads that played yesterday and another involved with us over the last few years that were involved. So myself, Kieran McGrath and Evan Sweeney were all playing in 07. David Kendi was playing in 07 and he's still with us there every night at training and was our goalie last year in the hurling. Like, so he's given serious service to the club and hardly ever missed a training even now at the moment. Like, I don't know what David is into. Is I don't know what age he's 40-something, so... Yeah, the four of us have been there since then, like, and like it's great to have that still going.
Yeah, no, it definitely. Well, I have to say before I let you go, the club is getting great coverage. Like, I mean, you couldn't buy this kind of marketing, you know. Like, I mean, I think everybody remembers the images from last year, how you've been able to bounce back, the fact you're a dual club. You know, do you notice the attention that the club's getting?
Ah, look, you do, Colin. There's no point in saying you don't. Like, we're all on social media. We're all on Twitter and Instagram and that, and you see the different things on it. Like, but I suppose it's like that's all great and that, but we got all the claps in the back last year, even though we had won nothing. And I suppose we kind of said this year over the last few weeks we were close again, and we didn't want to get all the claps in the back for being great lads, for getting close again, like, because you want to win when you get so close to finals. Like, so, like, people give us great support and it's very much appreciated, like, from inside the club and outside the club. And like, that's what makes it, I suppose, for us, and we're happy to be able to just give them something to celebrate. Like, we all know at the moment there's a lot of doom and gloom over different things, like, and so to have this, we have to give our parish a lift, and hopefully people that were even looking on from outside, give them a lift as something that they can enjoy. Like, it's nearly December at this stage and the year is nearly gone, but people are still in great spirits, and hopefully this will keep people in good spirits, because you could get down very easy if you believe everything that's going on out there in the world at the moment. So you have to live a life too and enjoy it as best you can.
Well, that's it. And you're still going to be enjoying life, because I'm sure today you'll have a good day. And obviously then out next week against Aroge in the Munster Football Championship, and then a small task of heading to Walsh Park to play Ballygunner the week after.
Yeah, so two big weekends coming up again, but look, I suppose we'll enjoy this week, yesterday's result now today, and we wake up tomorrow morning, whether lads will be fit enough or fresh enough to think about next weekend tomorrow, we'll wait and see. But come Wednesday night when we get back to the field, we'll get the focus on again for next weekend. And what an opportunity, like, just to go somewhere different, like, and go play. I've hurled a few matches in Ennis, but I've definitely never kicked a football down there, so that's going to be something that'll be interesting for us all, and we're all looking forward to it as well, like, and that'll be another great day out for us, and hopefully that we'll give a good account of ourselves and represent Tipperary as best we can in both codes.
Last question before I let you go. Has anyone ever showed up to hurling training and without their hurl thinking it was a football training session?
It has happened at times, yeah, it has happened at times. Or they'd have no hurley. And but I think since it happened a few times a couple of years ago, all right, but since that, I think people have learned just bring them all with you, and then whichever is going on is going on. So during this, when the matches are going, you know, the midweek, what's trend is going to be, like whether it's hurling or football. But I think John said a few years ago about hurleys and our slitters maybe thrown in the middle of a football session or something like that. But I don't think it's as crazy as that over there now. But we hopefully think that we're getting on all right with the way we're going anyway.
You definitely are. Noel, come here. Thanks very much for giving us your time this morning, and enjoy the celebrations today.
Thanks, Colin. Thanks very much.
So there you are now, Lee. There's confirmation. They did go for pints after the football match. We were wondering what the hell's going on. What would they do? They went for pints. And as Noel said, and he's dead right, I suppose if you go home after a game like that, you're not going to sleep anyways. You're as well off to have the few, have the bit of closure on it, the chat around it. And, you know, what's the point in winning it if you can't have the couple of pints?
No, that's it now. We've all got a soundbite that we could fire back to our managers for future reference. It's like, sure, they did it and they went and they won the double as well. We're probably not even drinking enough as a club. You know, we've got to bring back this drinking culture, you know, because we care about success and recovery and team bonding and things like that. So now I've finally got a case study, you know, that I can point to and actually say, look, it works. You know, it definitely give us the pints.
Yeah, we're not drinking enough as a club, lads. That's the speech that we're having. But that's the thing, like, I mean, they're busting the myth of the duel, and I think that's bloody brilliant. And a lot of players can now say to a manager, not just managers around the country that are, let's just say, discouraging it, clubs are discouraging it, which is just beyond belief. There's a very simple example of saying, look, hang on a second, look what they're able to do. I think it's absolutely inspirational. And that's why everybody loves him. Going for a few pints after a football match, after being on the road 17 weeks in a row with a hurling final the week after, they easily could have decided to go home. You know, like, they're doing things the right way and winning now.
They are, yeah. It's kind of like they're just doing it to, as Noel said in the interview, they're doing it to enjoy it, like, and you can see by the way they sort of die for each other on the field that they've enjoyed, like, it's not just the playing together, it's celebrating together, winning together, losing together, they do everything together. And, you know, like, when they win a county final, they were never going to go home. Like, I know we were half debating it, but, like, when you really think about it, they were never going to go home. And, you know, quite like an early night, like, after winning something like that. And I'd say Loughmore Castellini, it's only a small little parish in Mid Tipperary, but it must be absolutely hopping these last few weeks, because yesterday Frankie McGrath, the Loughmore manager, his daughters were part of the, and there was seven or eight other girls from Loughmore on the Drum and Inch team that won the Munster Senior Camogie Championship. They won the Tipperary Senior Camogie Championship the week before, like, and right. Like, half of them are, like, nearly all the, I think it's 12 of the starting team on the Loughmore, they're related, and all the girls are related, and it's just, like, everyone, they're winning together, and they're doing it the right way, aren't they?
It's a great time to be alive in Loughmore Castellani, and definitely the whole country is talking about them. The profile of the club has gone through the roof. Not to everybody's liking, but I thought it was the Thurles manager. I think he's a Thurles selector. Brendan Carroll was interviewed on TG Cahirley before the game, and he said, everyone's hyping up Loughmore. We're a bit sick of it at the minute, listening to it. Like, I mean, I'd say Thurles used the whole country rooting for Loughmore Castellani, you know, to motivate themselves, because they started the game really well, and they're like, listen, lads, you know, just it's sicking you, this going on about this crowd, you know. I'd say that's what they were saying.
No, it has to be, yeah. I mean, your whole plan was to go in and upset the whole party, let's ruin the whole thing and make it about us. And, you know, I mean, they're right to go in with that attitude as well. It must be really, like, you went on a brilliant adventure yourself, you know, winning the quarterfinal, the semi-final, you got yourself to the final, drew the last one, putting on a brilliant performance, and they were fantastic as well. Like, I mean, they were really up for it. So for everyone outside of your camp to be against you, like, you know, they should talk to Tyrone about the siege mentality thing and see how I can bring them forward, because that's what they needed to do. And like, they came close in the end, but you just couldn't stop the story that was Castellari's story this year, like the narrative of everything with John McGrath and all. Like, I mean, they were an unstoppable juggernaut this year. Like, they had to do it, and they did, and we couldn't be happier for it.
Yeah, exactly. The Chip Championship as well is a big winner in this, Niall. The drawn match, this one, again, referee letting it flow. Great spectacles on the television, everyone talking about it. The last 5 years, Thurles Sarsfields, Clonoulty, Borrisaleigh, Killadangan and Lochmore, five different winners in 5 years. A lot of them on the telly and a lot of them classic matches too.
Yeah, like, and in fairness to Thurles Arsfields, like, they played their part in that being such a thriller yesterday as well, like, because as we said there earlier, it was only the hop of that ball, like, that broke to John McGrath. If that had broke to a Thurles lad, they could have been in there. Like, it was that tight and it was end to end the whole way through. And I suppose it is a sign of how competitive the Tipperary Championship is. Five winners in the last 5 years. And watching that game as a Tipperary hurling supporter, like, you'd be proud to say that is the championship and those are the best two teams that are in Tipperary.
Yeah, because that's it. Because Killadangan won the final in dramatic circumstances, like we're talking about. When Boris Ali won it, they were involved in loads of brilliant matches too, weren't they? So, like, I mean, you're going very well in Tipperary. One other question I wanted to ask you. I saw our own Paddy Stapleton tweeting about Dennis Maher. He said, is Dennis Maher going to get a run for Tipperary now or what? Injury and work were the only things holding him back in prior years. If he was in his mid-20s, we'd be saying he's nailed on for full forward next year. How old is he? He's a big lump of a full forward. This would take a change in direction to be playing him, probably, wouldn't it, for Tipperary?
Yeah, I think he's 32 or 33, Dennis Maher. Like, he was the Thurles captain yesterday. And, like, in fairness, the semi-final, I'd watched their semi-final as well. And from there, the final replay, or the drawn game and the replay, the whole way through, he was just that focal point for Thurles Arsfields. Like, they hit the ball in on him. And he's so skillful. He's a great lad to win the ball, and he just knows what to do when he gets the ball. Like, he played for Tipperary before. I'd say it was around maybe 2011 on to maybe 2014, and he was a good hurler. Did well in different league games. Never really broke through. Like, he played a few championship games. Never really made a fixed place on the team for himself. Right. But he's such a brilliant stick man and such a brilliant player. Hands. Such a clever hurling brain that he'd definitely be an addition. Like, you know, he's 32 or 3 now. He probably lacks a small bit of pace, but I think he was never the quickest. But as Paddy says, he's just such a target man and such a clever hurler that he'd be an asset if he was in there, you know.
Right, we'll keep our eye out. Maybe Colin Bonner might want to go with a more direct game plan or something like that, although he's got an embarrassment of riches up front. The other county champions crowned yesterday are St Finbar's 14, Clonakilty 13. I was sent a DM on Twitter telling me never to call them St Finbar's again. They're the Bars. The Bars boys. So we're going to call them the Bars now. They won it in 2018 as well, Lee. You were watching this at the Irish Examiner live stream that I actually didn't get to see it.
Yeah, it was on a YouTube stream. It was very good. The Bars, that's their 10th Cork title now. It was an interesting game, especially because they actually got off to quite a slow start. It took them, I think, 12 minutes before they registered a score at all. Clonakilty, I think, were a point to the good at that stage, but the Bars goalkeeper, John Kearns, had made two excellent saves at that point as well. I mean, they could have easily been 2-1 up to nothing within 12 minutes. And then after that, although the scoreline always stayed within sort of touching distance and Clonakilty were putting a good account of themselves up front, like the majority of attack and play was definitely in favour of the Bars. And if you only need to look at sort of the wides count for that, I mean, I think they hit 9 wides and Clonakilty had only hit the 2, you know, so that shows you that they sort of had the chunk of the chances and they were just a little bit braver going forward. And at the day and seconds, the Clonakilty goalkeeper, Mark White. He had, you know, it was a very difficult chance in fairness to him, and he actually struck it well, but he hit it and you're like, oh, it's not going to make it over. This would have been to equalize the game. But then it sort of looked like it may drop short, fall into the full forward line, and we could see some sort of last minute disaster from a Bars point of view. But it went just wide in the end, and it's a cruel way for it to end from their point of view. But yeah. A decent county final for sure.
Yeah, Mark White, he's got a huge booming kick out anyways. He was the Cork goalkeeper for a few years. I don't think he was last year or the year before. He's a booming kick out. So I would have reckoned that the distance wasn't a problem for him. It just faded to the right. They were down on the field afterwards and I was singing Alela Blues. This is the song they sing. They're obviously tugged out all in blue. It's something you boys in Laura could borrow if you want. Allez le bleu, the French crowd singing at the rugby.
Yeah, all we need to do is win a championship. we'd be allowed to sing it and stop getting relegated and that kind of thing. But in fairness to you, if you're calling a club by their name and you're still getting called out by lads on Twitter, I don't know how can you win? Because
I'm calling them the perfect name written down in front of me, Saint Finbars, and I'm getting shit over that. It's the Bars.
They're obviously a bit of a cult, like when they've that Allez Le Bleu thing going as well, and that's the Bars and all this, like. But sure, I suppose, as we were talking about last week, they're kind of an iconic club, aren't they?
And although the one in 2018, it was their first title in 33 years, so they've gone through an awful drought. They were relegated into intermediate around 2007. Michael Shields came on yesterday and he was around for that relegation, and they lost a couple of finals, then won it for the first time in 33 years in 2018, and now have retained it. They have a young team, so it'll be interesting to see how they get on. They play the last time they played in the Munster club, when they won it in 2018, they were destroyed by Dr. Crokes. Now Dr. Crokes were at their height with that great team they had, in around there was 5-20 to 1-11, so they really need to, you know, there's no Dr. Crokes this year. Austin Stacks or Kearns Rattley's probably be manageable enough. Lochmore Castellani be good as well. I think they play Lochmore Castellani.
I think that's the winner of Lochmore and Ennis. Yeah, plays Finn.
Lochmore and Ennis. Yeah, that's Airog and Ennis. So, like, I mean, the Bars really need to redeem themselves, because, like, a team with such the history they have, like we were saying last Thursday, 9 county titles, 3 All Irelands. Like, to be humiliated in Munster by the Kerry champions for the Bars, you know, like, I mean, they're definitely, I'm sure, be going out. Even Ian Maguire said after the game, he said, it's our tradition to carry on now. We're not looking at the 80s team, we're looking at this team. So, like, I mean, that's it. The tradition's there. We don't want a repeat of 2018. I'm sure they're really targeting doing well in Munster now.
Yeah, well, when they won in 2018, it was the end of the famine, you know. Yeah. Maybe they did. Like, you kind of think that is, we've got to the promised land now. And, you know, it can be hard to get it going again. But Ian Maguire, he was the captain in 2018 as well, and captain again and man of the match yesterday.
And he's Cork captain too.
Obviously, like, he's kind of the talisman and the man that's bringing Finbars forward. And just having interviewed him before, and hearing what he's saying there, he'd be a great man to sort of lead them. And I'd say they will be much more focused this time around when they get into Munster. Like,
yeah, Clonakilty had a nice little touch before the match. Their 1996 championship winning team footballers lined the corridor in Páirc Cliath. We know obviously the Páirc Cliath is like a mini Croke Park, so you can picture the tunnel, like when you'd see, you know, the Dubs coming out through it. They were lined up along it, Lee, to clap the boys out and slap them on the back and stuff like that. Clonakilty, to be fair to them, they were well in that game, only lost by a point. They were 3-1 outsiders, and like we mentioned Friday, Liam O'Donovan wasn't playing, so again they'd have a lot to kind of, you know, be proud of and build on.
No, for sure. Yeah, I mean, they definitely made a great account of themselves, particularly because, you know, they'd only lost 2 games this season and both of them were to the Bars this year. So they, and one of them was a very good hammering as well. Like, I mean, they were well beaten. So for them to come out and be competitive all the way through, you know, they equalised really late in the game in injury time.
Yeah.
And you're sort of thinking the momentum might swing their way. But the Bars, Stephen Sherlock, like, he was well marked that game, but he scored 7 points, still 3 from play, and he got the winning score. You know, he was just on form this entire championship. He finished the championship season with, I think it was 341. You know, it was a very decent return. And, you know, he's good on the dead ball, and he's excellent, like, you know, like in terms of pressure, cool. Last kick of the game, you know, the big scores, he steps up in them situations. And for him to get score lines like that and still not get man of the match, because Ian Maguire was just colossal in midfield, and then their goalkeeper, as I mentioned earlier, John Cairns for the Bars, you know, keeping the 2 goals out. Like, if either of them 2 goals had went in, we could have had a completely different game on our hands. But then, just in fairness, the Bars, you know, from their last line of defence to their focal point in attack, they were just that little bit stronger in depth, and they got 3 in the end.
Yeah. Clonbalacala beat Rapparees on Saturday night. This was on RTE, so they got over Willie Dunphy's stag anyways. They didn't go too mental, because they were in good form. Like, I mean, I was watching this. It was the little purple patch just before half-time that played against the Rapparees. Had the wind in the first half, 8-4 up, and Clonbalacala got the last 4 points of the half, going 8-all, and then they have the wind in the second half, and Clonbalacala are a good second-half team. They had been in the Leash Championship anyways, so the kind of... the writing was on the wall maybe for Rapparees. That was Clonbalacala's first ever win in the Leinster club, which sounds, you know, incredible, but they're only a new club, and this was only their third attempt in Leinster club. So it's not, you know, stats can be misleading sometimes now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was with 20 minutes gone in that game and Rapparees 8 points to 4 up, you're nearly thinking Clonbalacala are in a bit of bother here, like, but And those, when a team scores before half time, whether they're losing or whether they're ahead, they're such important scores to get, because it completely changed the game there.
Yeah.
On
your
Saturday
tails
night.
Are off. The mood in the dressing room is completely different.
Completely, yeah. And you could see it, even the scores they got were brilliant. Like the one, Willie Hyland scored one, he barely even looked, and he was hitting it low. It was a beautiful point, like from the middle of the field. And he played his part in setting up one as well. It was a brilliant score they got. Someone hit the ball to him, he hit it across. And the corner forward in and got a lovely point as well. And that just completely changed the game for Clock Ballacolla. And like going in at half time, like having been 4 points down, getting it back to level, you knew the momentum was with them then coming out in the second half. And they never really looked back from there. Like Rapparees were a little bit flat in the second half, but like I suppose the fact they hadn't played in 9 weeks can't have helped them.
Well, that's it. I'll talk about that in a minute. But Picky Maher's goal was a lovely little goal, wasn't it? And you mentioned Willie Hyland's point. He took a pass and he wasn't even looking at the goals. He just knew where they were. Like, he's a Rolls-Royce type player in midfield. You have Willie Dunphy, you have Bergen in the corner, who are hard to handle. Willie Dunphy, I'm a huge fan. Like, he's all action. He wears his heart in his sleeve. Even Cheddar said on the show here, when he was on it, he doesn't know how he's still playing. His knees are completely gone. He doesn't know how he's walking. And Willie Duffy's still doing it for Laois and for Clock Ballacolla.
He's such a feisty character. There was one stage in the first half, I think it was Ricky Fox gave him a little snig after he was clearing the ball down the line, and Willie Duffy turned around and he was fit to row. Like, and any time any defender gives him like steps on his toes, even just a small bit, like Willie Dunphy gives it back to them twice as hard. And I'd say it's that sort of mindset, that sort of like mental toughness, like that just brings him through and even allows him to play when his knees are in such a bad way. Like.
He's marrying a physio, which might not come as a surprise.
Yeah, I'd say she'll have her work cut out with him anyway.
She'd plenty of practice, there's no doubt there. So Lee Niall mentioned Rapparees. Like, I mean, this is a serious disadvantage. Now, we are accepting the fact that we're going to talk about Ballygunner in a minute, who had an 8-week break and they won well. Now, Rapparees had a 9-week break. Like, for me, the Wexford County Board are not doing their county champions any favours. You're coming up against a Clock Ballacolla team who've played, won a county title up to 2 weeks ago, are on that roll, momentum, confidence, and you have a situation where Rapparees are sitting there for 9 weeks. It can't be an advantage, because you know, like, I mean, there's a big problem with teams when they win the provincial club and then there's like a 12-week break to the All-Ireland club and all that momentum's lost. But at least that's the same for both teams that are playing those All-Ireland semi-finals. And every player, every manager talks about how hard that is, that break is, and how to manage it. Wexford County Board are giving their county champions that obstacle, while the county champions they're facing will not have that obstacle. Like, Wexford need to, when you see Loughmore Castellani playing 18 weekends in a row, you hear Noel McGrath saying he loves playing hurling 1 week and then he's back to playing football the next week and he's missed the football because he hasn't played it in a week and now it's all fresh and new. And this is Noel McGrath, they're all saying the same thing. They love the week on off. Wexford have ripped that up. They think it's a much better idea to play hurling all on its own first and then football all on its own. I don't think that's the right policy at all. I think it was brought in around COVID maybe for some reason, and I remember even their chairman was bragging about how successful it was. That is not right. It's not good enough for your county champions to have that obstacle put in front of them.
No, I think it worked out like 10 weeks in the end that they were near enough.
10.
That, you know, that, yeah, I mean, that's just outrageous. Like, you're basically starting a whole new season in terms of, like, when you finish a county final and you've got to that point, your body has just peaked, you know, like, because that's what you've been preparing for. You've reached like that athletic peak in your season. So what comes after that is inevitably some form of a drop, and then that drop, and you need to get it to build it back up again. And 10 weeks is like, with no able to really get friendlies and challenge games, and mentally, you know, trying to drag yourself in to go to training when you know, you, oh god, sure, it's not, the game's not for another 8 weeks, it's not for another 6 weeks, it's not for another month, you know, like, you know, it just drags on and on, and you know you've got it hanging above you. You don't even know who you're playing specifically until 2 weeks before. It's a huge disadvantage. And but strangely enough, I would have thought that with the long layoff, that the danger for Rapparees going into the game would be that it takes them too long to get involved. They start really slowly and then the game sort of chases away from them or falls away from them. But it was sort of the opposite that happened. They actually managed a very decent start and they couldn't keep the momentum or the tempo up long enough too. So if it's any clue at all, it would say something down to match conditioning, really, and that just comes with playing games, which obviously they weren't.
Yeah, they had a wind as well in the first half, which probably helped their good start. Because then we got Ballygunner, almost the opposite. See, Ballygunner liked, they had 8 weeks, and Rapparees had 10. Ballygunner had a few injuries in that county final. They were, their manager said afterwards that the 8 weeks was very, very good for us. There was a lot of guys injured in the county final 8 weeks ago. Four of them playing today and three of them probably took injections to play in that match. So the break has really stood us in that regard. They got players back. Now, we were wondering last week how you even, you know, fill that 8 weeks. So they took, you were suggesting the first 2 weeks off. That's what Ballygunner did. They gave them 2 weeks off. Dara was saying, we gave them 2 weeks off and went back at it. The first challenge we played was against Sarsfields of Cork and they gave us a trimming. But they were playing the following week in the championship and we weren't playing for another 6 or 7 weeks. So they gave them 2 weeks off, then played Sarsfields, got destroyed. And then kind of tried to build it up for the last month again. Now, I would argue Ballygunner are just way better than everybody. You know, they won that. I still think that 8 weeks was a disadvantage to Ballygunner if you didn't take, you know, if you didn't take the injuries clearing up into the consideration.
I say the thing about Ballygunner is that they were nearly focused on the Munster club from the start anyway. Do you know, like they, like they're so, like it's, is it 8 or 9 in a row they've won in Waterford now that they're just... Like Waterford isn't even, like winning a county final for them isn't the biggest thing. Like I'd say they weren't even, like they're obviously hurling like at their, as well as they can. But I'd say that they're, at the back of their minds, they're thinking like, we're going to have a run at this Munster club. They probably saw that there was a 8 or 9 week gap that there was going to be, but they'd have kind of been mentally prepared for that. And I'd say, like, you know, they've never won the All-Ireland club before and they seem like men on a mission this year. Like, and I'd say Rapparees, you know, when they won the Wexford, and it was the first one in a long time when they won the Wexford county title. So they probably hadn't taken it into account at all about, you know, that they're going to have this 10-week gap until Leinster. Probably hadn't even thought about Leinster. Just Ballygunner would have been slightly more prepared for it, like, but... Yeah, the move in Wexford, they play the Hurling Championship first and then the football. Yeah.
And in Waterford, same thing. They're the only two counties doing that.
I think Carlow might do something similar as well. But they, like I'd say it was brought in with the kind of the best intentions of kind of, you know, I think it was just a clear case of overthinking it, isn't it? Like, you get one done first and one. Like, because players, when they're in championship mode, as the Loughmore boys keep saying, like, it doesn't really matter if it's hurling or football. Like, you're going to be sharp either way. And the change, sure, that's the change will only freshen you up, as Noel McGrath has been saying. Like, so I think they just overthought it in Wexford and Waterford because it didn't do the Wexford boys justice there.
No, and I think they need to re-examine that, both Waterford and Wexford, because they're outliers now by the looks of things. You say Carlow might be doing it. Incredibly, Desi Hutchinson didn't score out of 320, so I don't know how that's even possible. Kilmacud Crokes beat Raharney. Ronan Hayes got two early goals. He was obviously the hero. A lot of Roy the Rover stuff. He was the hero in the county final, obviously. You know, we kind of want him to burst into life. Conal Keeney, Niall always talks him up on the show saying, you know, you want to see this lad in club hurling in Dublin. And then I remember Paddy Stapen said to Conal, yeah, but that's club. It's a big step up to inter-county. And like, I mean, Paddy is right and Conal is right. But we do need to see Ronan Hayes doing this at inter-county level now, because there is something there.
Oh, Dublin, definitely. Like, they need him. Like, in fairness to him, he was going well this year and it was such a huge loss for them in the Leinster final, because he was one of the four boys that missed it because of COVID. Like, and
yeah,
he had been showing it this year. He played well that day against Galway when they beat him in the Leinster semi-final, and he's kind of just been coming into his own gradually. And this year in the club, like, sure, that day against Kilmacud, he was unreal. And it was the same yesterday, two goals inside 20 minutes. And by the sounds of it, there were just these typical Ronan Hayes goals as well. He's so strong, so fast. He beats his man, like, he just kind of holds him off. And he's the pace then to burn someone and the skill to finish it as well. Like, because, like, I think I said it two weeks ago, if you're to build a hurler, like, this lad has it all. Like, so Dublin kind of have been maybe crying out for a lad like him. And I'd say it's only a matter of time before he kind of makes his mark for Dublin. Like.
Yeah, relentless running. Kieran Dowling, his manager, kind of described that's what he does. He's constantly on the move and he's starting to score a little bit heavier now, which is what Dublin, you know, will be looking for. No dressing room still in Mullingar. This game was in Mullingarley. Like, I mean, it's just a head scratcher now. We've covered this enough without going back into it. We know that Westmeath are the Westmeath County Board, the official guidance from Croke Park is COVID certs. Only vaccinated people allowed to use the restroom. Now, every county in the country is turning a blind eye to that, and rightly so. It's feckin' -3 in Port Leash the other night. Like, give me a break. And it would have been, it's freezing here today. It's freezing yesterday. Like, they're following it to the letter of the law and saying, we don't want to discriminate and leave some lads outside. And that's understandable to a point. I said, just forget, just don't pay any heed to it. Just let them in. Let them get warm. Let them get a shower. This is cruel. Kilmacud Croke's brought their own tent or their own gazebo or whatever down, sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Fair play to the big Dublin clubs. You know, just in case it rained. This is bonker stuff.
Yeah, it's absolutely reached like party levels when you've had to set up your own tent as a changing room right next to the changing room. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. Sorry, a dressing room. That's my northern dialect coming through. But like, it's beyond farcical at this stage. There's nothing else you can really say about it. And the GAA, I think, have missed a trick in the sense that they should have just been open and said that open them a little bit earlier, like last October, even the end of September. They should have made that decision and then they would be open now. Because now when it's coming up to Christmas and, you know, the media is a lot more filled with COVID-related stories and cases and hospitals are full and things like that, it's going to be a lot harder for them to publicly come out and just say that it's open. You know, they should have done it a couple of months ago and it would have reached the stage and no one would be saying that all the reason for all these high cases or hospitals being filled is because of dressing rooms in GAA matches. Like, I mean, no one was going to be making that argument. So it's just, I don't know, it's one after the other with it, really. It begs belief.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. But sure, I suppose there's not too much more we can say about this. Westmeath are just sticking to their guns. Hopefully there's no more bloody games there anyways. That's all you could hope for. Their county championships are over and now they're all Lomans, wherever they play Port Harlington. I don't think that's in Mullingar. I don't think that's in Cusick Park, thankfully for both teams. Championship draws were on this weekend. I suppose the only place to start, Lee, is the Ulster Championship, because that's the most interesting one. And it's a good draw. Like, it's a good draw for the neutral. Tyrone, preliminary one, could have been better. Tyrone, Fermanagh. So Tyrone have to win 4 matches to win Ulster this year. But the quarterfinals, Tyrone up some great games. Derry versus Tyrone, potentially. Donegal, Armagh. Not a nice draw for Armagh, who are trying to build. Antrim, Cavan will both be delighted to draw each other. And then you have Monaghan Down, which will be, you know, both teams probably glad of drawing each other as well.
Yeah, it's a really interesting draw right from the... Well, I was going to say right from the start. Maybe not the preliminary round. Fermanagh, I'm sure, would have preferred any other team but Tyrone. But I seen Fergal Logan coming out and sort of talking about how it's an extra hurdle and the extra game is something of a disadvantage. But like, Tyrone teams love that preliminary round, that extra game, that more momentum, much like, you know, like Tramore this year in the club championship, they had the preliminary round and they really built on that and carried that through right to the final where they won. In terms of, like, if you were to go on paper, odds on favourites, and you had to pick it sort of shaped itself nicely that it could be a Tyrone and Donegal final. But like, you know, Donegal, they're so touch and go. Are they going to perform this year? They always sort of falter at the last second. And then I wouldn't even be super confident, and I know it sounds a bit ridiculous given that Tyrone just won an All-Ireland, but coming up against Derry, provided that they get through.
Is that Derry?
I think so,
So that Derry could win that.
Yeah, they could. That's it. You know, and that's why it's so interesting. That's why this championship is the one that everyone should be watching and all the TV channels should be fighting for their rights for it, because each one of them games could throw up any form of a curveball from the very beginning.
Yeah, no, it definitely would. Enda McGinley, apparently, they're drawn first against Cavan. And he said there's already a plan for a protest because it has to be in Corrigan Park. I'd imagine the Ulster Council might try to shift it. We'll see how that develops. But would it be amazing to get playing against Cavan at Corrigan Park? They obviously want their home advantage there in that one. Like, I mean, that's the Ulster Championship. The Connacht Championship, the only news there is that Mayo play Galway in the quarterfinal. So that's good news for everybody else that one of the two of them will be out. Obviously, Keane O'Neill is in with Pádraig Joyce to try and improve Galway. Mayo still very, very strong favourites to win that whole Connacht Championship. At least we've a good game early. You know what I mean? And we'd have some good games early in the Ulster Championship as well. Great news for everybody in Munster is Cork play Kerry in the semi-final. So we have Tipperary, Waterford, Clare, Limerick who are going to be in the Munster final. And that is great news for them, because the Tailteann Cup is in play next year, and that is all Division 3 and 4 teams are going to be in the Tailteann Cup. Whoever finishes in 3 and 4 at the end of next year's league will be in the Tailteann Cup, unless you make your provincial final. So one of Tipperary, Waterford, Clare, Limerick, you know what I mean, will be well, Clare in Division 2 anyway, they're not too bad, but that'll be good news for them. Leinster didn't draw any semi-finals. They did this last year as well, and it's just kind of a reflection on how, let's call a spade, shite the Leinster Championship has become, that if you do the draw the whole way through, everyone will see at what point they meet Dublin. It'll be demoralising. Well, that's it. So they actually don't do any draws for the semi-final until after the quarter-finals, Niles. So, like, I mean, there's no doubt that's the reason.
Yeah, like, it's kind of the Leinster Championship, sure, it's been said so many times the last few years, like, how much of a dead duck it is. And, like, I think it wasn't it Westmeath that got Dublin last year, and it was just the season was nearly over. It literally was over before it started.
Over, yeah.
Like,
in a knockout, yeah.
Yeah, like, just like looking back on the Munster draw, like, as a Tipperary fan, you're delighted to see that, because the exact same draw as 2020 when they beat Cork in the Munster final. Like, so Cork and Kerry in the semi-final, it opens the gate for those other counties. So it can be hard enough to even think about the inter-county season at this stage when the club is going on and you're kind of just enjoying the club every weekend. Like, but I suppose it does whet the appetite a small bit when you think of little plots like that.
A little bit, but like, I mean, it's very underwhelming. Like, I mean, this used to be on television, and like, I mean, I'm not blaming RT for putting it onto the radio, because like, I mean, they're not a big draw anymore. The only Ulster Championship, really, the hurling's not a draw anymore because they're leagues. So you're only seeing when teams play each other, in what round. Mm. So there's no draw in hurling. The only one that's worth while is the Ulster football. Isn't it a sad day, really, that the big, you know, we're back to no Super 8s. We're back to 2017 qualifiers, All-Ireland quarterfinals, semifinals. We're back to pre-season competitions. Nobody has any really interest. There was no real interest Saturday in these draws. Like, I mean, compared to what we could have had, you know, it's a little bit sad that there's very little interest in a draw for our flagship, you know, competitions. And that's kind of it. Like I said, the hurling, all we know in the Munster Hurling Championship is that Limerick play Cork in the first round, which is fantastic. It's a repeat of last year's final. And to play Waterford in the second round, which is a repeat of last year's All-Ireland semi-final. So, like, I mean, that's it. Kilkenny play Galway in round 3 in Leinster. That's all we have to discuss here. Like,
it,
really.
it doesn't really register with you now, because it's just, like, it's just a date.
Lockmore Castellini is more interesting,
yeah,
really, isn't
like,
it?
Like, it's just kind of up in the air at this stage, and you don't, like, you're not thinking about, oh, Kilkenny are playing Galway on July 31st, like, oh, I need to get ready for that. Like, it's just it's kind of underwhelming, in fairness, like, because it's so far away, and as you said, there's more important club stuff going on now. Like,
yeah, exactly. Here's another one I wanted to talk to you about, because I was obviously talking about to Conor McManus about this last Thursday, and it's the under 17 competition, and you two lads are obviously an awful lot younger than me, so you might have a better take. Like I said, I don't have a huge strong opinions on it either way, other than I don't see what was wrong with under 18, and the obvious thing is to go under 17 so that anyone under 17 can't play senior, and there isn't a crossover, and it doesn't mess with fixtures. And Conor McManus is able to tell me very quickly, well, sure, why don't you just say if you're playing under 18 you can't play senior until the under 18 is over, and maybe play it off earlier. There's a solution there, because Joe Brawley was writing about this as well, and he was getting a lot of reaction to it. People feel very strongly about this, Lee, and I'm trying to understand it. And what I'm understanding is that you play up until under 17, and then your next competition is under 20. And we all know the under 20 isn't as serious as the minor, because people go to college. The best under 20s play senior, and that's what they're more, you know, focused on. And often I remember when I was under 20, you'd train on a Friday night when everyone would be home from college, you know, and it's kind of run off. Like, I think I've played an under 21 county final on St. Steve, you know, after Christmas or around Christmas time. It's not given the same prestige. And what people are a little bit annoyed about is that you finish at 17 playing minor instead of 18. That year from 17 to 18, you're in secondary school, you're still around at home, you're not in college. Why is that year of your life been wasted when you could be playing minor? And I suppose I do understand that argument.
Yeah, and that's completely it. I mean, because, like, we talk about the benefits of retaining players and how hard it is to retain players from minor level alone, and that is with the under 18. So when you're making the cutoff point at 17, so that's a year less where you're less like physically developed, you're still in school, you're essentially still, you know, a child, a teenager, you're, you know, living at home, relying on your parents to cook your dinner and stuff. Like, you're not a grown-up person, but you're thrust in with all these beasts of men, you know, from like they're anything from 23 onwards up. And you could even be a better footballer, but because physically they dominate you so much, you can't, you know, express yourself in the way, and football just doesn't become enjoyable anymore. The under 20 thing is exactly what you said. All the best players go straight into the senior team, and then that leaves a handful of players who aren't good enough, and there just isn't enough to field most teams, and the competition just try to run it off very quickly, and just whatever gap that they can find to run it off in. Joe Brawley in his article talks about how his own club, he managed the minors, St. Bridget's Minors, I think it was, like, for 3 years in a row, they reached a couple of county finals and things, you know, fairly successful. And the natural progression then this year was for him to take the under-20s. And he said that it was just a disaster from the get-go. The best players went straight to senior. He didn't have enough players for a lot of the times and matches. They were meant to play Corrigan last week, and Corrigan being the top dogs of Antrim football in recent years, and Corrigan couldn't field for the game last week, so it was just abandoned.
How come that argument was never there for under 21 level, which has all those same issues?
Well, I would say the argument was there because when I worked with the BBC and Radio Ulster, I did a package way back in, I think it was 2016, about is there any sense in the under 21s anymore because of the drop off levels and people not filling teams and the championship being ran off so quickly. At least then you're into uni before you've made that decision, you know, are you going to play football or not? And you had that last year at school. The argument back then, and I was actually talking to Enda McGinley about this, although he was in favour of keeping the under-21s, he said then that, like, maybe there could be more of an emphasis on reserve football, reforming it and making it a much more competitive and viable tournament, you know, for players where they can develop in it. And then that will, in turn, would create more room for thirds football, where the players who are, you know, semi-retired, or they just want, people who just want to have a game and, you know, they don't want to take it very seriously, that's where they can all go instead of filling up the reserve leagues, and reserve leagues can become more competitive and people, young players can get their games and develop and then take it on forward. Although I know in Kildare that they have now started an under 23 league and they're saying that it's very successful in terms of retaining numbers and stuff.
But here's the thing. Like, you can't have the argument that you don't want the under 20 because it's impossible to run, and have that same argument that you want an under 23, which seems to me what Joe Brawley is saying, Liam. Am I right? Like, I mean, he's saying under 20 is a joke, but he's also promoting an under 23. Holy mother of God, if you're 22, 23 and you can't play senior, intermediate or junior at senior level, for me, an under 23 competition would be the greatest nuisance of all times.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's the answer. He's just, it was one of the examples that he used in terms of Kildare. Although, instead, and with that, though, you would still have the under-18s. So at Kildare, they, I don't know how they've done it, but they've just ignored the rules. They've kept the under-18 model and kept the minors as is. So I don't know. I guess the people who really play for the under-23 teams maybe are those who are off to college and stuff, and they're sort of there and not there. You know, they can be a bit flimsy with their time and schedule and their commitment and stuff, and then the more serious players just play on for senior. And because the age gap's just a little bit longer, you know, 18 to 23, you'll just have a bigger pool to select from, so you can actually field the teams. But it's only an extra 2 years. I'm not saying it's definitely not the solution, but the under 17s is a problem for sure, and they're gonna end up losing more and more players. And even if the GAA are, they're so slow to fix things all the time, that if it takes them another year, then you're gonna have, you know, 2 year groups of players who've just missed out on their minors and maybe don't want to come back to football until the latter stages, where they missed a brave chunk of their development.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with them with the under 18. I think that should be reinstored. The under 23, how is that fixing anything? Anything is making it work. Like, surely the guy, I see it in Port Leash, any of the young lads that finish under 21, if they're not good enough for senior, they're the lads that are making up the intermediate team. And the lads that are even not as good as that, they're the lads making up the junior team. And sure, you'll have no, if you've an under 23 competition to cater for those lads, like, I mean, what are your adult teams going to do?
I actually couldn't believe it when I read that there was an under 23 competition in Kildare. Like, it's just, like, as you said, like, who's
extra
going
fixtures,
to play extra fixtures for lads? Like, if you're not playing senior, when you're 22 or 23, you're going to be playing junior. And, like, you're not going to be I can't see like kind of travelling home for training for under 23, a competition yeah. that's kind of no tradition.
But you get my point that if you cannot make a case against under 20 or under 21, and then in the same kind of, like only Joe Brawley could really do
yeah.
this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But like in fairness, I think the under 21, you were kind of saying that it's the under 20 and under 21 are kind of similar, and lads making the case for 21 against 21 that they should be against 20 then. But I just think it's the tradition kind of thing is a bit kind of adds to the thing. Like you'd like our clubs in Tipperary to be playing under 20 hurling and you'd still call them the under 21 team, do you know? Yeah. And it's just kind of the under 21 was kind of taken seriously just because it's been there for so many years. Like, but
right, and the under 20 seen almost like a blitz. Let's just do this new thing. Yeah,
yeah. And the under 17 is nearly the same. Like, and as Lee was saying, like that final year in school, like, and you're 18 years of age, you're still at home. Like the minor championship was like that was the thing. Like, and that was what everyone would be talking about in school. Like when it's under 19 or under 20, lads are up in college and it's not the same kind of, there's not the same buzz about it. It nearly yeah. becomes a nuisance coming home for it and stuff like that. So I think, as Conor McManus said, it's kind of just mad that they changed it in the first place because there seemed to be no reason to change it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's probably the best thing about it. Nobody really asked for it. I do take your point with the under 21 as well. When it's always been there, you might focus on it a bit more than this new thing. And what really annoyed me is the under 20 at inter-county level now. Like that's, I know Offaly got a lot of, coverage for winning it. But the reality is the best players play senior. The best players in the country are not even playing in that under 20 competition. Now, I think in Offaly, they retain them all at the expense of their senior team because they wanted to focus on it. But like David Clifford, Sean O'Shea never played under 20. They just went straight playing senior. And if you play senior, you can't play under 20. And that just makes a bit of a farce of it. And if it's a bit of a farce at the inter-county level, you know, the under 20 at club level mightn't be taken as seriously at all. And maybe that's why clubs are not fielding teams. And it's gone a little bit messy. If the under 20 is turned into a bit of a joke and you're finished playing underage at 17, like that's not right.
No, like it does make a joke of it that kind of, the best under 20 players aren't playing for their counties, like, and as you said as well, if it's not going right at inter-county level, how is it going to be going right at club level? Like when lads are kind of only, they need to be coaxed, like some lads need to be coaxed along anyway, and they need to kind of have something, you know, something like the under 21 championship, maybe a bit of tradition that might bring them back, or the teams did well in years previous. This time it's just a little bit haphazard, and it is no wonder really that you're seeing these walkovers and teams not really, clubs not really putting much into that under 20 championship.
Yeah, exactly. Last one is Owen Cadigan retired over the weekend, and I thought he was worth mentioning considering we're talking about dual players so much on the show, and they are obviously extinct at inter-county level. We know that there's none. He's the last one I think played. 2014 was the last year he played both in the same year, and then he focused on football for 3 or 4 years and then finished up 2 or 3 years with hurling. So like, I mean, I think Podge Collins, he's still playing, but he's not playing dual. And Seamus Kennedy, I don't think he ever played senior with the footballers, did he, Niall? He's more dual at club level.
Yeah.
He played underage football. Or he might have played 1 year
played a year with TIP football. I'm yeah. not 100% sure now.
But these are just lads that have played both.
Yeah. It's a rare thing.
Cadigan's the last one. It's extinct. Like 2014, Cadigan, probably the last one that's ever done it.
I think so. As Podge Collins, I'd say, was the same year, 2014. Wasn't it the year or two after they won the All-Ireland when he, I think it was 2014, he gave the both of them a go. And it didn't really work out for him. Like, he had too yeah. much going on and he got
well,
injured.
He was on the slide on the hurling even before that anyways. I don't, would you blame it on the
I think just, yeah, maybe just the injury that he picked up. I think he did the cruciate ligament and that kind of just, especially when he was doing so much, like, it was hard to kind of get back from that. But, yeah, like, when not many lads, it is extinct, as you said, and it's sad enough, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, listen, we'll accept it being extinct at inter-county level, but we will not stand for the club level. We will not stand for it. It's just not going to happen. Paddy Cunningham, Lee, as well, he retired over the weekend. Paddy Cunningham, this is his second retirement, obviously, so, like, I mean, we'll give him a second tribute here, you can.
Yeah, I mean, what a fantastic player he's been for Antrim, obviously. I mean, he's had to suffer with some illnesses and things, you know, manage his whole playing career in and around that. But it's testament to him that I think he's 35, 36 or something, you know, that he's still able to play such an important role for for his county. I don't know. I think he just didn't ever want to. Like, Antrim's got a bit of a buzz about it, you know, at the minute, under Enda McGinley, this new exciting manager, you know, he's promising. They got out of Division 4 last year, and a lot of that was to do with him. He came off the bench on two occasions to hit two wonder scores right at the death, one in particular against Louth, Mickey Hart's Louth, in the first game, where he just curled it outside the boot and the last kick of the game to win it for them. So he's got them to Division 3, you know, that... A go at the championship. He knows he doesn't have much left in terms of his legs, what with his illness and stuff, so he can proudly retire today and say, you know, that he's left Antrim and his jersey in a better place than it was, you know, beforehand, and he can sit back and watch it as a fan.
Yeah, exactly. A wand of a left foot. I think it was Enda McGinley did a lot of persuading to get him back last year, and probably the fact it was a knockout championship and it wasn't the longest season in the world probably, you know, fed into it. And Paddy's like, don't come at me again this year. No way. You talked me around last year, but you're not going to do the same again this year. Right, so congratulations to Owen Cadigan and Paddy Cunningham on two great careers. Owen Cadigan and Paul Galvin had some great battles back in the day with the football. That was the fish hook incident, wasn't it? Where Cadigan or Paul Galvin had his fingers in Cadigan. Wasn't that Cadigan?
Yeah, it was.
The fish hook, yeah. So they had two right battles back in the day.
We missed Keith Higgins. Wasn't he a Jewel player for a few years there?
Did he do the Jewel?
I'm nearly sure he did, because he won a Christy Ring with Mayo. Was it 2017 or 18? And he was playing football at the same time.
He might have been, but with the Christy Ring, it's played early in the season, so he would never have been crossing over during the championship with Mayo. He might have played it in the same season. Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll leave it there before we start trying to find some more. We'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview the weekend's club action. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, filth. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.